Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. I'm Jeff Gamet. Today is Friday, August 31st, 2018, and with me today, I have Joel Duggan. And Joel, it is great to have you here.
Thanks for having me, Jeff. It's an absolute pleasure.
It's great to have you here. And for people that don't know who you are, tell me a little bit about you and what you do, which will help explain why I want you here today.
I am a cartoonist and an illustrator. I've been doing that for about 15 years professionally. About halfway through that, I started podcasting. So I've been doing that for about 7 years now. I've got a number of different shows. I'm also a publisher and I think now also a YouTuber. So the many hats have just been growing over the last little while.
And this is why I wanted to get to chat today, because you're a really talented artist. You're doing so much in the digital media space, and you're just all around cool, which actually, I guess what I need to do is set this up for everyone. What I'm doing today and next week is interviewing people that I think are really cool and really interesting that are doing something in the podcasting space. So we're kicking this off today with you, Joel. So thank you for being here.
Hey, I wish I had like a kicking the doors sound to insert, you know, like the hey honey, I'm home Kool-Aid guy, like poof, you know, hey, we're here to talk about podcasts.
That would have been fantastic. And I can't believe we don't have a Foley artist here to take care of that for us.
Hindsight is 2020.
It always is. Yeah. Hey, we also have a sponsor today, and that sponsor is Jamf Now. And I'm actually kind of excited about talking about them, so I'm going to make that happen right now. Jamf Now, what they do is make a mobile device management system. So if you have a bunch of iOS devices, iPhones, iPads, if you have Macs, Apple TVs even, and you want to keep track of all the device settings, serial numbers, you want to make sure that you have secure passwords on everything, you want to know what apps are installed, if someone that has a device that you're managing manages to screw up or forget their email settings somehow, you can push those back out. It's an amazing tool. For me, it's been wonderful because it's been like a family lifesaver, because I can put my parents' devices into my Jamf Now account. And when I get the phone call that says, I don't know what happened, but my email doesn't work and I didn't touch anything. And I go in and say, well, hold on, and push their email settings back out and say, check your email now, and get the response of, wow, it's working again. Thanks. Two things have happened. First, I fixed the problem. And second, I've saved them from having to admit that they went in and messed up their settings. And well, I guess three things happened, because now I don't have to rearrange my schedule to drive an hour or two to get connected with whoever it is and get their devices working right again. It's also really handy if you have a business, because you can manage all your devices for your business as well. And if something gets lost or stolen, no problem. You can just use Jamf Now to remotely wipe the device and then turn it into a brick, so you don't have to worry about your super secret business data getting stolen somewhere along the way. I also love that this is a free product to sign up for, and you can manage three devices for free. And that's not a special deal, that's just what they do all the time, forever. So you can sign up for free, get three devices for free, and any device after that costs only $2 a month per device. So what you should do right now is head over to their website, which is jamf.com, jamf.com/TDO. Sign up for your free account at jamf.com/TDO and get those three devices in there for free. And thank you to Jamf for being our sponsor all week. All right, now let's jump into some of the things that you've been doing, Joel. So you've done a lot of digital art, and mm-hmm. you've been growing in the podcast world. And So let's start off with some of the podcasts you're doing and explain to me what they are, and we'll go from there.
Sure. So my mainstay is the Citadel Cafe. It is a weekly geeky show where myself and a number of hosts get together and talk about the geeky stuff that we're into. It could be television, books, video games, whatever. We each kind of bring one or two items to the table to talk about that week, and then that's kind of just what we discuss. There's a lot of things like Game of Thrones, Marvel movies. Sometimes video games come up more often than not. It depends on what's kind of hot right now. Mm-hmm. But it started as a way for me and two really good friends of mine to keep in touch after they had kids. Instead of going out for a beer, they were stuck at home with toddlers. And so I just thought, well, let's just crack a beer and have a Skype call and we'll just record it. Mm-hmm. So that started 2011, I think, about 7 years ago. Since then, those guys have moved on because now they have like very active 8-year-olds. So
sure.
not quite as easy as having just a toddler. But I have moved over into having a bunch of rotating guests. I've got my friend Hammond Chamberlain. I've got Brock at Vola, Megan Townsend, and Lou Page, all podcasters in their own right. That come by kind of like in a rotating once a month sort of situation. So it keeps the show fresh. We've always got some new stuff to talk about there. And then on Comics Coast to Coast, I interview artists, animators, illustrators, etc. So right up my professional alley. That has been going longer than I've been on. So I've been on for probably 200-ish, 230 episodes. Mm-hmm. Brian Dunaway is at the helm of that show. Brian has been doing the show for 10-plus years. And I remember this, the one time Brian lost a couple of co-hosts to them having very busy professional lives. And I emailed him one time saying like, hey, I've been doing Citadel Cafe for like a year now. If you ever need me to pinch it for like a Saturday or something like that, like when you can't find a co-host, I can totally fill in. I was on the show 2 days later and I've been on since. Like it just, that's kind of just how Brian works, right? It's just like, sure, come on in. And then we've been friends and we've been podcasting together ever since. And that show is a lot of fun. So if you're into art, and we interview some writers too, like it's about creative stuff that centers around comics and illustration and animation. And then most recently, I just kicked off my third podcast. I don't know how or why I found time to do this, but I now have a third weekly show called The Spawn Chunks, and I do this with my friend Johnny, better known in the Minecraft circles as Pixel Riffs, and it is a show all about the video game Minecraft.
You know, the funny thing is, as soon as you said Pixel Riffs, I knew who you were talking about.
Oh, nice. Yeah, his reputation precedes him, for sure. He's a very talented content creator in the Minecraft world, and also, to quote one of our recent reviews on iTunes, one of the nicest guys in the Minecraft community, and it couldn't be more true. And I think that kind of sets the tone for the show. It's family friendly. All the content that Johnny creates is family friendly, and most of what I do is family friendly as well. So having that kind of content in a podcast for Minecraft makes it very accessible to all kinds of players.
That's very cool. So you said you weren't sure how you found the time to start up yet another podcast. I wish I had a dollar for every time someone told me that in the podcasting community. Because what I found is that once you get into this, it suddenly becomes this thing where you realize, oh, I could do a show about this, and I can do a show about this. And your occasional spot show suddenly becomes a whole series of programs that are running every week. Mm-hmm. And then it's a matter of trying to figure out how you let your podcasting world spin out of control and become this crazy thing. But then it's also so much fun.
It is a ton of fun, and we're having a lot of fun, the Spawn Chunks. It's a topic, Minecraft, that both Johnny and I are quite passionate about. And it's a fun thing to talk about. You know, I mean, video games in general are fun, but Minecraft is a very fun spirited game, you know, like it's not violent. It's very cartoony in that way. So there's a lot of, you know, fun kind of woven into the game. I also, as far as the scheduling goes, I don't host and produce myself more than just one. So the Citadel Cafe, I do all the recording, the editing, the posting, the publishing, all of it. For both SpongeChunks and Comics Coast to Coast, those duties are split among the co-hosts. So it's not like I'm 100% on all the shows. Johnny has an audio production background, so he does all the video, the podcast editing. I've taken care of some of the website stuff just because I already had a web host, so it was easy for me. And as far as Comics Coast to Coast, same thing. Brian does all the audio editing. Really, on Comics Coast to Coast, I have probably the smallest role. I'm the line producer. I just line up the guests. I set up the interviews, and then I show up to record the show. But outside of that, everything else is handled by Brian. So it is manageable, especially in the summertime right now, because comics folks are in the middle of convention season. And we have, if anybody that goes looking for Comics Coast to Coast, you'll notice that we haven't had a lot of episodes this summer. And that's because it's really hard to get artists to sign up for a Thursday night show when their Friday, Saturday, Sunday is potentially convention here, convention there.
Sure.
So we tend to have a slower production cycle in the summertime, but then it picks up again in the fall.
Okay. I want to switch gears a little bit and talk about your art. And I had seen some of your art prior to us deciding we were going to do this show together today.
Oh, cool.
But I didn't actually realize I'd been looking at your art because I see so much around, and I'm always on the hunt for cool comic-related art, and, well, just art in general.
Right.
So I'm curious about your process. How do you go from the concept in your mind to the finished product?
So are we talking about like a comic strip like Starcrossed, or are we talking more like a commission for someone?
Let's go with a commission.
Sure.
Because I'm betting you're doing that on a pretty regular basis.
Yeah, I do. I do have a few clients. I actually have a couple clients on the books right now. So usually it involves a conversation with the person doing the commission. Say it's a gift for a husband or a wife or something like that. Mm-hmm. And they'll say what they have in mind. For anybody out there looking to hire an artist, it's usually best not to have a super narrow field of what you want, but a good idea helps. So let's say they like Deadpool and the husband is into all kinds of different geeky stuff. And then hopefully the last sentence of the email is, but I'm also cool with some ideas that you might have, Joel. And, you know, so that will involve a little bit of back and forth. You know, you get the technical stuff out of the way. Is it a 9x12? You know, do you want it colored? Are you looking for a digital piece that doesn't have any original art with it? Or are you looking for like pen and ink on paper, something original to hang, you know, on the wall? I mean, in both cases, you get something to hang on the wall, but one is going to be a high quality digital print, and then the other one is going to be an original black and white, you know, drawing. Mm-hmm. Various degrees of time investment for me. So I custom stuff. I don't generally have like a one-stop shop unless I'm at a convention, because the conventions and stuff like that, usually people are just coming up to the table saying like, hey, I like your style. Can you draw me Deadpool? And I say, yeah, sure. That'll be, I don't know, $100 or whatever that happens to be for that convention. Mm-hmm. And then I'll just do that. And there's really no editing process. Whereas if someone's hiring me to do something very specific for someone's birthday or wedding, I've done a number of family portraits for people that have just had their first child and that kind of stuff, I like to send them a rough drawing, just like, hey, just making sure, you know, that this is going in the right direction before I invest all of my time in coming up with something. So once I've established that kind of idea, it's usually an afternoon at a cafe with a sketchbook, just kind of putting some loose things down on paper. I find that's the easiest way to work. I'm traditionally trained. I'm self-taught when it comes to Photoshop and digital stuff. So I do a lot of my finished work that way just because it's easy to change things. You know, if people don't like the blue shirt, I can change it to red quite easily. But when it comes to like really getting going, I'm still much more comfortable with pencil, paper, and eraser and a nice cappuccino somewhere.
Sure.
So I do that. And then I'll come back and I'll probably draft up, you know, the rough and the inking and all that kind of stuff will happen. And then it's off to the client. Like that's generally the creative process for commissions.
Okay, cool. Now you did also mention Starcrossed, which I know is an online comic strip that you've done over the years, and it's not something that's getting updated every single day, but it's something you have.
Yes.
So what's the difference between doing, say, that commission piece and working on a digital comic strip?
It's funny. I almost want to say that the digital comic strip is harder, even though there's no client involved. You become your own worst enemy. Perfection is the enemy of done. And I am definitely guilty of that when it comes to Starcross, because comic strips were my young adult love. Like when I was going through high school and into university, where I had did a fine art degree, the mission was be a comic strip artist. Like that was the goal. So I was looking at people like Bill Watterson and Frank Cho and Bill Amond and those people that were doing it for a living, and drawing my best to just not necessarily copy, but certainly beg, borrow, and steal everything that I liked that they were doing and try to make it my own. Mm-hmm. And so I get caught up in the quality of the drawing. I get caught up in the writing and stuff like that. So for Starcrossed and writing a gag strip, I mean, it's 50%, if not more, writing. If it's not a funny joke, chances are the drawing's not going to save it. So Those ideas are not necessarily something that you just kind of sit down and do. A lot of times what you have to learn as a cartoonist is just be aware of those ideas as they come and have something to write it down on. Or in this wonderful world we live in, have a mobile device that you can type it down on. Because then there's something always with you that you can say, like, you know, even just like using a voice assistant, which is even better. You know, like I don't even have to, you know, I'm walking down the street with a couple of bags of groceries. I can just go, you know, hey, Siri. I just activated a bunch of people's devices, including my own. Remind me to write the comic about this, you know, hairy guy I saw on the bus today. And so that will at least jog my memory when I get home to be like, right, I have to write this down right now because I know how this is going to play out. So that if you can get a handle on recording ideas as they come, then when it comes to sit down and draw a comic strip, it's a lot easier because you'll have 5 or 6 ideas to choose from. You can write the one that you're in the mood for. Unless you're in the middle of a storyline, you can literally pick the gag that, like, well, I'm not feeling like super punchy funny today. I'm feeling more subtle or sarcastic or grumpy. So you can pick the comic strip that matches. And I find that my art generally ends up being better when I'm in the mood to draw, you know, that particular type of gag that day. Mm-hmm. And then it's just a matter of penciling the strip, inking the strip. For me, I do it traditionally. So that's on Bristol. And then I scan it in and I do all the speech balloons and lettering in Photoshop. But I have a font that I made of my own printing. So even though I'm using a font, it's still my hand printed stuff. It took me a year or two to figure that out. I was doing a lot of lettering by hand and it was adding a solid hour to the production process.
Oh, man.
Yeah. So I cut that out. I have never been, and I've kind of given up the ghost. I am never going to be a fast artist when it comes to my own work. It takes me a solid workday between 6 and 8 hours to go from blank strip to finished strip posted online. So that's one of the reasons why it's become so hard to keep Starcross updated weekly, is that it's a huge investment per week.
Sure. Yeah. Hey, we are getting close to out of time. So,
wow.
I know. This always happens to me. I'm talking to someone. It's such a fun and interesting conversation. And then I look at the clock and think, holy crap, we're almost out of time.
Well, so, we all are podcasters as hobbyists. So,
yeah.
So to get someone on mic that has the gift for gab, I don't imagine what the odds of that would be.
Yeah.
pretty high, I would imagine.
All right. So I'm going to toss a totally left field question at you. Which do you prefer, the original Battlestar Galactica or the Sci-Fi Channel reboot?
Having never seen the original, I have to go with the reboot.
I'll go with the reboot with you. Although I love, love, love the original, which I did see, and I do not consider the follow-up series Galactica 1980 as even existing.
Okay.
I prefer the Sci-Fi Channel version because I like that characters are gray. They have flaws. Mm-hmm.
Yep. I enjoyed the fact that it was one of the first shows where just because an actor was in the opening credits didn't mean they weren't going to die that episode at any point in the season. And I really enjoyed that on the edge of your seat kind of aspect to it.
Yes.
I'm an odd person to ask because when it comes to older TV shows, I just generally can't stomach them. There's something about production quality and I'm not the guy that can go back and watch terrible movies because they're so funny that they're so terrible that they're funny. Not my bag. It's like nails on a chalkboard. So if something has got a reboot and the reboot is good, I'm more than likely going to prefer the reboot.
Well, what you should do in all your spare time is go back and just find some clips from the original Battlestar Galactica, because it's really impressive, the special effects that they had for the time, because that's a TV series that was coming out when the original Star Trek movies were happening.
Okay.
And that's when we were first starting to see some massive improvements in special effects. And they were doing on a TV show what amounted to movie quality special effects every week.
Right on. I will have to YouTube that one.
Yes. But as far as the storylines go, you will probably have trouble with that because, I mean, it's so very black and white for every character. And it is a product of its time, but at the same time, it was years ahead of anything else. So, cool. Hey, we really are out of time, so we have to wrap up. Joel, thank you so much for joining me today.
Hey, no problem, man. My pleasure.
Yeah, it's great to have you here. And thank you to Jamf Now for being our sponsor today. Head over to their website, jamf.com. That's jamf.com/TDO. Sign up for your free account and get three devices into that for free forever, and only $2 per device per month after that. So thank you, Jamf Now, for being our sponsor. Listeners, thank you for joining us. I will have more interviews for you next week, and Monday is Labor Day, so we're taking the day off. So we'll see everyone again on Tuesday.